Okay, we read two verses. So I have to read them again, and then we read the commentary on it. Satvam rajastama iti shatavatma bando maya mayakstiti layod bhavahetavosya lila dvita yadapi satvamayi prashantyai nanye nvinam vyasana moha biyascha yabhyam tasmad daveya bhagavan atatavakanam shuklam tanum svadaitam kushalabhajanti yat sattvatak purusharupam ushanti sattvam loko yato bhayam utatma sukham na chanyat. O my Lord. This is spoken by Markandeya to Lord Narayan Rishi. O my Lord, O supreme friend of the conditioned soul, although for the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this world, you accept the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, which constitute your illusory potency, you specifically employ the mode of goodness to give complete peace to the conditioned souls. The other two modes simply bring them suffering, illusion, and fear. O Lord, because the kingdom of God, where there is fearlessness and the happiness of the self, is achieved through the mode of pure goodness, your devotees consider this mode, but never passion and ignorance, to be a direct manifestation of you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Intelligent persons thus worship your beloved transcendental form, composed of pure goodness, along with the spiritual forms of your pure devotees. Okay, there are three modes in the material world. The mode of goodness, although it is a mode of entanglement, also works in the other direction to help get the living entities less entangled and to lead them in the direction of liberation. And there is the pure mode of goodness, which is manifest in the spiritual world. It's especially manifest in the personal body of the Supreme Lord and the bodies of his pure devotees. Okay, and now this verse is explained in the next section, 10:11, these two verses. Anayor artaha, he isha, yadyapi sattvam rajastama iti tavaiva maya krita lila, katambhuta, asyaiva vishvasya stityadi hetavaha. This is the meaning of the above two verses, as follows. Yes, O Lord, goodness, passion, and ignorance are your own pastimes, effected by Maya. What are they like? They are the causes of this universe's creation and so on. Tatapi, ya sattvamayi saiva prashantyai. Prakrishta sukaya sukaya bhavati nanye rajastamo mayau. What are they like? They are the causes of the universe's creation and so on. And although this is so, that's the three modes, are the causes of this universe's creation and so on. And although this is so, only the pastime of the mode of goodness is conducive to complete peace, perfect happiness. The other two, those of passion and ignorance, are not. Na kevalam prashanti abhava matram anayur kinvanishtam chetyaha vyasaneti. Not only is there no complete peace achieved in those two modes, but there are also undesirable results, as the words beginning vyasana state. So This is basically an argument why one should avoid contact and influence of these other two modes, passion and ignorance. At all costs, avoid them and cultivate goodness. This is the basic message of this statement. Of course, that's a difficult program. People spend lifetimes struggling to accomplish that, to accomplish giving up their connection with passion and ignorance and taking shelter properly of the mode of goodness. That is the whole program of becoming a Brahmin. And it can take lifetimes to achieve. But the principle is simple. Okay, so the words beginning Vyasana state this, that there is not only do passion and ignorance fail to give you the peace and satisfaction that's the goal of life, they cause just the opposite. They cause all sorts of pain and disturbance. Okay, and then it is said, I'm looking at the Sanskrit, okay, hey Bhagawan. Okay, the conclusion is now drawn from that. Hey Bhagawan, tasmat, tava shuklam sattva maya liladishtatrim tanum shri vishnu rupam kushala nipuna bhajanti sevante natvanyam brahmavrudradi rupam. O Supreme Person, therefore those who are expert worship, render service to your unsullied form in the embodiment of Lord Vishnu. What's the word there? Shuklam. So I was translating Shukla. What does Shukla mean in the dictionary? Which? I'm sorry. Anybody have it? We'll look it up. Shukla? Of course, it can mean white. Or pure. Bright white. What else? Spotless. Okay, so I use the word unsullied, which is just a fancy way of saying uncontaminated. Unsoiled. Unsullied is there. Okay, maybe I picked it up from Moni Williams. I don't know. So I translated Shukla as unsullied, which is okay. It's just not a very common word nowadays. Upon which form of Vishnu are based your pastimes of goodness? They do not worship other forms like those of Brahma, Rudra, and others. Okay. Oops. Hare Krishna. Tata tavakanam jivanam cha madhye shuklam sattvaika nishtam tanum. So the verse just has another word, tavakanam. But here we're construing it as also going with Shukla Tanum. Your Shukla Tanum, and also the Shukla Tanum of those who are your devotees, those who belong to you. Satvaika Nishtam, of course, the devotees have pure bodies not in exactly the same way that the Supreme Lord does. He has an infinite, absolute body. They have finite bodies, but they're still perfect. Sattvika, so Shukla is there. See, the Shukla in reference to Bhagawan's body is glossed as Sattva Maya Lila Adishtatrim. That body which presides over all the pastimes that are based on the mode of goodness. But that's how the Lord's body is Shukla. But the body of his devotees, that Shukla is there glossed as Sattvaika Nishtam, based exclusively on the mode of goodness. Tanum, Tadbhakta Lakshana Swayam Uvaman Vadi Rupam Te Bhajanti Anusananti Natu Daksha Bhaira Vadi Rupam. They also worship, follow in the footsteps of the bodies in pure goodness of those who are yours, the personal forms of these among the jivas, like Swayambhuvamanu, who are identifiable as your devotees. They do not follow in the footsteps. The word "the" is missing. In the footsteps of the forms of Daksha, Bhairava, and so on. Insert a comment. "The" is missing. Okay. So, what does it mean to worship the body of the pure devotees, the pure bodies of the devotees? It's not exactly the same as worshiping the Supreme Lord. The proper worship of a devotee is really to follow in his footsteps. What's the use of throwing flowers at a devotee and offering him arti if you don't follow in his footsteps, if you don't follow his instructions and actually give him practical service? They do not follow in the footsteps of forms of Daksha, Bhairava, and so on. What does it mean to follow in the footsteps? Yes, sir? Follow instructions, is that all of it? Well, one thing is, it means don't imitate. Follow, don't imitate. Anukaranam, not anusaranam, not anukaranam. Footsteps means you're following. That means that person is in front of you, that he's already gone. He's gone where you're going, and you're following behind. He's already accomplished the sadhana that you're trying to learn. So you're learning from his experience and doing the things that he did that made him perfect. That's following in footsteps. Okay. Next, katam bhutam. Okay, and again, what about this body of the Lord and the body of his devotees? What is it like? Swasya tavapi dayitam. Loka shanti karatvat. What is that form of mind like? It is very dear. Because another adjective is given. Swasvadayitam. So swasya, that means your own, to you. Oh, rather, what I say here, it is very dear, dayita. Even to your own self. Because it bestows peace on the entire world. Nanu mama rupam api sattvatmakam iti prasiddham. Tarhikatam tasyapi maya mayatvam eva. But, who's offering this prayer? This is Naranarayan answering. The Purvapaksha here is coming from the Lord who is being addressed. He says, but it is well known that my personal form is a product of the mode of goodness. That must mean that it is also a manifestation of illusion. How is that so? Here's the argument. You're telling me my body is made out of sattva. Doesn't that mean it's maya? Answer. Nahi, nahiti, aha, satvata, shri bhagavata, yat satvam purushasya tavarupam prakasham ushanti manyante, yatascha satvat loko vaikuntakya prakashate. Answer, no, not at all. The form, meaning appearance, rupam is a gloss as prakasham. The form or appearance of the Purusha, you, in goodness, which the sattvatas, the saintly devotees of the personality of Godhead, desire, which they regard highly, from which goodness, moreover, is manifested the world of Vaikuntha, that form is fearless and enjoys within itself abhayam and atmasukham. Excuse me. No, I didn't read the Sanskrit. Yatascha satvat loko vaikuntakya prakashate tadabhayam atmasukam pamabrahmananda swarupam eva natvanyat prakriti jam satvam tadati. That body form from which goodness, moreover, is manifested, the world of Vaikuntha, is fearless and enjoys within itself. It is the very self of the bliss of Brahman, and it is not the other goodness that born from material nature. Okay? Commentary. Sage Markandeya in these verses refers to the process of universal creation. Processes, plural, of universal creation as pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Since the Lord has no obligation to work for any purpose, everything he does is lila, play. He never suffers, nor do the devotees who participate with him in his pastimes. We might presume that Vasudeva and Devaki must have suffered greatly when their first six children were murdered by Kamsa, and that Srimati Rukmini must have been very unhappy for the 20 or so years after her first son, Pradyumna, was first son, Pradyumna was kidnapped. Okay, I'm arguing that the Lord never suffers, and his devotees, the devotees especially, who are directly participating in his pastimes, how can they ever suffer? But look, Vasudeva and Devaki had their first six children murdered by Kamsa, one after another. And Pradyumna, the first son of Krishna and Rukmini, was kidnapped. She must have been very unhappy for the 20 or so years after her first son Pradyumna was kidnapped, for which time she had no evidence to believe he was still alive. But Krishna's pure devotees never actually suffer. Even the apparent catastrophes in their lives are part of Krishna's lila, which always ends happily. The pastimes of creation, however, are different. In them, the co-participants are mostly fallen souls, sufferers. Do we agree with that? That Krishna's pastimes always end happily? You sure? Any counterexample? Yeah? Okay, maybe all the pastimes don't end happily for everybody. Yeah. Does that mean that Krishna actually made them miserable? Okay. You're not going to propose that. So there's something more complicated going on. Yeah. How are you going to define happiness? Okay. It's not just that, though. That they're happy to, that sounds... some other religion than ours, that we enjoy being miserable for God. I don't think that's our.
Yeah. Yeah, but they feel that Asamanda Samutkanha, that Krishna is more merciful than I'm low, than I'm fallen, and they always believe that Krishna will eventually.
Okay, but isn't there an ecstasy, a special ecstasy in Vipralamba Bhava? No, it's not just. I'm sorry. As far as I've been told, I don't know anything about it, no experience of it, but that in the experience of separation from Krishna, there's an actual special experience of ecstasy that's even greater than the ecstasy of being with him. No? So, anyway, there's more to it than just the satisfaction of making Krishna happy. You get some your own. You get some pleasure too.
But
it's a great mystery. So, yeah.
Are we open this to questions? Because I thought our format was different.
Well, I opened the discussion. Yeah. Oh no, not questions. And if you have any answers, you can give them. No.
This made me think of the past.
No. Well, okay. Go ahead, but that's just this one. Otherwise, we're going to get off into.
It's like Haridas Thakur, when he got beaten, he said that he didn't feel anything.
Yes.
Because Lord Chaitanya took all. So he seems that there's apparent suffering, but there's none.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, let's see if I said anything sensible in the next sentences here to help explain anything. But Krishna's pure devotees never actually suffer. Even the apparent catastrophes in their lives are part of Krishna's lila, which always ends happily. The pastimes of creation, however, are different. They're pastimes, they're Krishna's pastimes, but there's something different about them. In them, the co-participants are mostly fallen souls, sufferers. Unlike in his transcendental pastimes, in the material creation, the Lord cannot share his ecstasy. The capacity to experience, which is forfeited by the souls who become bound up in illusion. The demigods who contribute to universal creation, maintenance, and destruction, however, are devotees of the Lord of varying degrees of purity. They can share the Lord's enjoyment to the extent that they are pure in their devotion. Especially his prime agents, Lord Shiva, Shiva's consort Maya, Lord Brahma, and transcendental sages like Narada. So these spiritually advanced servants of the Lord are participating in the creation and maintenance of the material world. They get to enjoy some ecstasy to varying degrees. Maybe not pure prema rasa, but something. They get some pleasure and satisfaction from the Lord's creation pastimes. But the rest of us are just sufferers, and we're not participating in the rasa in any way, directly or indirectly. Just like in Krishna's pleasure pastimes, there are demons who don't have prema, who don't experience rasa. They may be giving pleasure to Krishna, but they're not sharing the pleasure. Not if they're not on the level of being able to experience rasa. The demon who is killed by the Lord, there's a rasa of what do you call it? Not it was Raudra and Bibhatsa there, but virya, of heroism. But the demon who is fighting with Krishna, even though he's a noble opponent, if he's just a demon and not a devotee, then he's not experiencing the rasa. He's not sharing the rasa. He's part of the fight, but he's not part of the rasa. Okay, only pure devotees can experience rasa. Pure devotees and the Supreme Lord. It's not for demons and materialists to experience. Like that, we have lots of participants in the Srishti Leela who don't experience any rasa, just the pain and frustration of material existence. That's what makes it different. A Leela in which most of the participants aren't tasting any rasa. Continuing. The influence of the three modes is avoided altogether only by persons who have become completely liberated from material desire. Lords Brahma and Shiva are the universal controllers of passion and ignorance, and are subject only very slightly to the effects of these modes. Other demigods and demons, although superior to human beings, are influenced to varying degrees. Sarge tapoham vishayo navaye prajesha stani tadharma makamananda amaravanisha Ante Twadharma Haraman Yuvasha Suradya Maya Vibhutaya Imak Purushakti Bhajaha. Any idea where that's from? You're looking at it. You're not even supposed to have the file. Okay. Are there anybody not looking at it? Know where it's from? It's toward the end of chapter 7 of the second canto. Lord Brahma's talking to his son Narada about the Leela avatars. At the end of the chapter, he has some general statements about different kinds of incarnations. The translation, spoken by Brahma, for creation there are penance, myself, Brahma, and the Prajapatis, the great sages who generate, that's for the process of creation. For maintenance of the creation, there are Lord Vishnu, the demigods, with controlling powers, and the kings of different planets. And at the end, there are irreligion, that's destruction time, at the end, there are irreligion, Lord Shiva, and the atheist full of anger, etc. All of them are different representative manifestations of the illusory energy of the supreme power, the Lord. Daksha, the great but somewhat materialistic progenitor, sage, is a typical representative of the mode of passion. Bhairava, an expansion of Lord Shiva, typically represents the mode of ignorance, because they're mentioned by Jiva Goswami. You know, the kind of bodies you don't want to worship. So Daksha is representing passion. Bhairava, one of the Rudras, is representing mode of ignorance. We should not be misled by the first of the two verses spoken by Markandeya to think that the Supreme Lord's body is ever material. As Markandeya clarifies in the second verse, any embodiment of the Supreme, again I leave out the word the, hold on a second, the Supreme Lord himself, that is not merely an expansion of part of his energies, is necessarily Shuklam Tanum, a form of pure goodness. The most elevated devotees of the Lord, like the Satvata clan, who join Krishna in his Dwarka pastimes, only worship him in these purely spiritual forms. I say that because the verses mention the Satvatas do this worshiping. So who's these Satvatas? I'm just giving you an idea. Satvatas are specifically part of the Vrishni dynasty. And the term is used actually also to refer in general to the devotees of Lord Vishnu. Satvata Samhita is one description, epithet of the Bhavatam. It's the scripture for the Satvatas. It's not just for you know, one clan among the Vrishnis, it's for all the Vaishnavas. Oh, okay, let me put the word the in where it's missing here. Of the Supreme Lord. Okay. That's a question, isn't it? Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you about translation.
Okay, actually, before you do that, I'm going to have to stop now. I'm still in a weak condition. But so we'll open up the floor for discussion. Anything you want to ask or say, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you about your translation of Atmasukham in the text of the
Sanarbha. Atmasukham, yeah.
Abhayam Atmasukham.
Yeah.
Because you seem to translate it as which enjoys within itself. If you have itself as a pronoun pointing out to pure sattva, then it makes it into an inanimate object which
I'm
cannot enjoy.
Atmasukham. Yeah, go ahead. Which enjoys in itself.
Within itself. So I wonder if it's proper to say if something which is denoted as itself can enjoy, if it's denoted as an inanimate object.
Well, but, you know, Todd is referring to the body, right? So we're talking about the body enjoying, which you might object to, but this is the body of the Supreme Lord. Mm-hmm. So it's not different than him.
Okay, so
but referring to it as a body, rupam is neuter.
So just warps the
calling
eye.
Calling it tat. Yeah, well, that works in Sanskrit, but maybe English is confusing.
Just warps the eye when they see in English. Yeah, enjoys within itself.
I think in English it doesn't work as well as in Sanskrit. We don't have, we have to use tat in Sanskrit because it's a neuter noun. But saying it in English makes it impersonal. What's that? Can you read me the word so I can find it? The English words? The actual phrase so I can look at it?
Fearless. Oh, you want me to help
and
you find it?
It is fearless, I see.
Yeah.
The form. The form, appearance of the Purusha is fearless and enjoys. Not only that, the sentence is just too convoluted. You know, the subject is the form, the predicate, so all the way at the end, is fearless and enjoys within itself.
Could it be translated as Atmasrupa? Could it be translated as like happiness personified? Then it will do away with the problem.
Where are you going to put happiness?
Instead of Atmasrupa, it enjoys within itself, if it's translated.
Yeah, actually, that's just my gloss. Okay, I'm going to make a comment here. And see, I've already sent this to Keshav Bharati Maharaj for editing. So I can't change it now. I can only make comments. Okay, because he has the active file. What I have in front of me is not the active file anymore. There's a principle of you may get involved later in book production. When a book is in production and it's being passed around between editors, only one copy can be the active file at any given time. You know, the changes that are made in that file are the actual changes. And anybody with another copy of the file that isn't active has to get them transferred into the active copy. You got it? Otherwise, if I'm editing it and the other editor has a copy and he's editing it also, then it gets mixed up. You know, there has to be one copy that's the active copy, only one. And I don't have the active copy right now of this. So I'm just making notes on the side. So I don't have to solve it. It's just the problem is itself. Sounds impersonal. I think that whole sentence has to be clear. It's expressed more clearly. It's not even clear that the form is the subject and is fearful is a predicate. It's so separated by all this other stuff in the middle. And then we got the problem that the form is rupam, it's neuter, and it, you know, it's hard to understand what's going on. Okay, I'm going to show that to Keshav Bharati Maharaj and we'll figure out some way to fix that sentence. Yes?
Just a second. Also, another remark right at the end of the commentary. Only worship him in these purely spiritual forms, even though it's implied that these refer to sattvatas, but no, not these refer to the forms, actually. So it's a bit confusing. Only worships him in maybe his purely spiritual forms instead of these. Because then these could be taken to refer to sattvata's purely spiritual forms.
Okay.
It's ambiguous.
I'm making a note about that. I'm making a question here. Whose forms? Whose forms? Vishnu's? Or the sattvata's? Right? Yeah. Good. Okay. So we'll fix it up in the editing. Anything else about this or about anything? Yeah.
Krishna, question about is there any happiness from the part of the Lord or His devotees,
yeah,
for in the matter of saving or reclaiming this suffering souls, like Lord, He saves the souls who are in this material world, like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, He came and He is saving us. So, is there any special happiness which is not found in Vaikuntha Loka, on spiritual world, in doing this?
Yes. I mean, I can't speak as an expert of about the feeling, the emotions of the Supreme Lord, what he's feeling, but we can feel it ourselves. Special ecstasy of delivering fallen souls. We get to participate in that pastime. We can all act as the Lord's agents in doing that. And at least it's obviously better than all other kinds of pleasure that we know about. Unless we're perfect devotees, we don't know about the pleasure of in Vaikuntha, but we know about the other pleasures in the material world. So I can't say, because I can't speak on behalf of the Lord, and I only know material kinds of pleasure to compare to.
Is there any descriptions of this pleasure in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu?
Of the pleasure of preaching? Descriptions of it. I'm sure there should be. I just can't think of any good examples, but I'm sure there, you know, if we think about it, we can find some. Narada, did he explain, he discussed what he feels? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees, did they say something? I don't know. I had to think about it. Very often, I mean, the usual situation is that the preacher is significantly more advanced than the people he's preaching to, and therefore he's not free to reveal his emotions. Yeah, the guru doesn't open up his inner soul to his disciples because they're not ready to understand those things. So therefore we don't get much insight into what the advanced preachers are really feeling, any more than we know exactly what God is feeling. You know, just because we're just not ready to understand those things. So it may be hard to find examples of the actual taste of delivering fallen souls. You just have to experience it. Yeah. Save some fallen souls and see what it feels like. Yeah. All right. Something else? Okay, we'll stop for now. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.